Today we talk about six ways that modern society screws you up and my six solutions to these issues. On the surface, these might seem quite simple, these problems that modern society presents, but if you combine them all, they're actually pretty deadly and they slowly rot away your ability to be happy and lead a fulfilling life. These tentacles reach down into all aspects of your psychology, your habits, your view of what life is about, and so on. It goes very deep, so stick around to learn these six ways that modern society makes you miserable and how to solve these problems. This is a Deep Psychology podcast. I'm Ross. We blend spirituality, psychology, and self-help to help you shine a light on your inner workings. The insights I share have helped me deeply understand myself and transform my life. Listen to this podcast if you want real, powerful insights and to avoid all the fluffy nonsense that abounds in self-help circles. Listen to this podcast and follow me and you'll know more about your psychology than 99% of people in the world. You can find me on all the major podcasting platforms or head to deep-psychology.com, which is visited for thousands every month, for tons of free resources. Before we begin, I think it's important to say that I don't want you to think modern life is all terrible. We have a lot to be grateful for, a lot to be proud of, and I could do a video talking just about the amazing parts of modern life. But I see people getting caught in all of the traps of modern life, these six traps, and I've been there too, and it makes me sad. I was not happy when I was caught in all these traps. And I do still get caught in them, don't think that I'm perfect, but I think a lot less than the average person. And just by moving around these traps and taking steps to avoid them, you can really make a big difference to your levels of fulfillment. I think modern life sounds good on paper, like when we imagine it, it sounds amazing. But when I actually look at myself and I look at people around me, I see that people are very unfulfilled and pretty dysfunctional, actually. And I guess a basic view to hold as we're going through these six ways that modern life makes us miserable is to see life as a game or a set of possibilities, like a blank canvas. And as humans, through our evolution and through our, all the decisions we make, we've defined it to be a certain way. And it could be different, and it will be different in the future. But at this point in history, this is what we've come up with. And why have we come up with it? We basically do this, and this is a Buddhist principle. It's a good perspective to take on this. Is we do it all to avoid pain and to experience joy. This is what it's all about when you really go to the root of it. And this is a good thing to remember, both just to understand why this happens and why you're a slave to it, and also just to have compassion for the whole thing. I don't want you to be cynical. I don't want you to just complain about things. That's not my point here, but this stuff is damaging. And knowing that it's really to avoid pain and experience joy helps you get out of it. Okay, the first way modern life makes you miserable is comfort. Comfort, you can basically sum it up in three words. This is how I sum it up, is cheap, quick, and easy. That's how we're made to think that things are. They're cheap, they're quick, and they're easy. We have an extraordinary amount of luxury available to us. A luxury that our parents and grandparents' generation couldn't even imagine. And it's all available very quickly and for very little money now. You know, whatever you want, you can look it up on the internet and a few days later it arrives at your door. So that seems amazing, right? That seems like it would make us happier. However, the problem with this is that you start to live for comfort and you start to confuse happiness with comfort, you start to confuse success with comfort, and it ruins your view of life and how things work. I want you to look at advertising. advertising now, this particular time, it's all about quick and easy and fun. It's the easiest way to learn a language in 6 months. The how to effortlessly learn an instrument in 2 weeks. And the thing is, it's all bullshit. It's total bullshit. You're being manipulated and exploited, and it's making you miserable. The only person that this all really benefits are the entrepreneurs and the marketers, the marketeers. This is who it benefits, because they're basically exploiting a flaw in our psychology that makes us seek the cheap and the quick and the easy, like a dog, like an animal that has no control over its impulses. The basic flaw here, and this is why it makes us miserable, is that things in life, the best things in life, aren't cheap, they aren't quick, and they aren't easy. Things that are worthwhile take time. If you want to learn a language, it takes time. If you want to become a master meditator, it takes time. You want to start a business, it takes time. You want to transform yourself, it takes time. And it's all pretty uncomfortable, especially when you first get your hands in it. And our material comfort has not changed that fact. The fact that everything is cheap, quick, and easy now, it doesn't change that. It can't change the basic law of that things take time, that reward is proportional to effort. It can't change that. And it makes you profoundly miserable, because you basically live for the cheap and the quick and the easy. And the cheap, the quick and the easy is actually not very good. That's why it's so cheap and quick and easy. The way out of this one is to ignore advertisers, to ignore things that are cheap, quick, and easy, to make long-term plans and goals, to think about what you really want out of life. Make that the basis for how you make decisions and plan your day. And to get used to things hurting and taking way longer than you imagine that they will. Install powerful habits that take you to your goals and chip away at them over months and years. And while you don't get this immediate gratification that you do when you just buy cheap food, quick food, easy food, cheap entertainment, you get a deep sense of belief in yourself, you reach your goals, you create lasting, fulfilling pursuits. The second way modern life makes us miserable is distraction. So basically, we have a range of entertainment that, again, previous generations could have scarcely imagined. So much so that we can basically entertain ourselves wherever we are. You know, we've got the TV, we've got phone, we've got music, podcasts, videos, Netflix, and it's all pretty much available whenever we want it. And again, this seems amazing because, right, we're stimulated and we're entertained, right? The problem is you're actually not. And here's why. This is the flaw here. When I look around at other people, and I see it in myself, but I see it more than other people. Maybe that's a flaw in my own psychology, but I do think I'm freer than most people. One is that people dread dead moments. The clue is actually in the name. Moments when we don't have anything calling our attention, when we're waiting around, we're waiting in line, we're waiting on a bus or a train. Moments like this, we actually dread them. And the second part, and this is a twisted part about this, even when we are distracted, even though we have this constant distraction available to us, we're still miserable. It doesn't matter if in our dead moments we have something to distract us, it doesn't really do it. It doesn't solve the issue, and it actually makes you more of a slave to boredom. Basically, the trap that we were falling into here is that with any vice, you develop a resistance to it. With time, you start tolerating more and more of it, and you need to receive more to get the same amount of stimulation, of sort of taming that boredom, of making yourself feel excited. we can't escape this basic mechanism, no matter how entertaining our entertainment becomes. The more distraction you expose yourself to, the more you need to distract yourself. And so it's this never-ending game of avoiding boredom, avoiding feeling like nothing is entertaining you at a particular time. And the more you do that, the more you need to do it. That's the basic problem here. And to be honest, I'm actually shocked by how bored and distracted people are. It actually makes me feel, I don't know, it's disturbing to me. Like, it feels like I'm in some sort of alternate reality when I see, I don't know, people on the train and they look extremely bored and distracted and miserable. Their answer is to take out their phone and to look at their phone and whatever. I don't know what they're doing on the phone, but that's the solution. What you're not realizing there is that your addiction to your phone is the problem. It's not the solution. That is your problem. The solution is that you don't know how to sit and do nothing. You don't know how to be bored. In fact, being bored isn't even a guaranteed thing. It's just your own state of consciousness. That's what causes boredom, and that's what causes you to distract yourself. I just think our tolerance for lack of stimulation, let's call it lack of stimulation instead of boredom. Our tolerance for lack of stimulation is so low, and we have no idea how to be with a lack of stimulation, that we just immediately turn to distraction. And I think it's actually getting worse. TikTok and shorts, you know, YouTube shorts, this is quite new, and it's worse than what all of the stuff that's come before it. And this is like the pinnacle of our addiction to distraction and to stimulation and excitement, supposed stimulation and excitement. Because again, just because something is quicker and flashier and more stimulating doesn't mean it actually has that effect, because we're so tolerant of it. We're so resistant. We've got such a resistance to it, a tolerance for it, that it doesn't even do anything. And actually, we just go deeper into this black hole. The way out of this one is you just have to wean yourself off. You have to realize that it's actually making you profoundly empty inside. It doesn't do what it is supposed to do. It doesn't make you feel excited, even though it claims to. It's all shiny and fun and exciting and quick. It doesn't actually work. If you actually feel your body and be aware of what's going through your mind and how you just, your state of mind, be aware of it, you'll be aware that it actually doesn't do what it's supposed to do. In my case, I don't really feel bored ever. I don't. I've found a way to enjoy having a lack of stimulation, and actually in a certain way to look forward to it. And to be honest, my way has been meditation. It's completely changed my relationship to stimulation and to boredom. And basically, when I have a lack of stimulation, I meditate. And it's actually about embracing the lack of stimulation and seeing it as like a chance to retrain my body and mind to a completely new way of looking at life and of being fulfilled that has nothing to do with distracting myself. So weaning off and also maybe practicing some meditation, it really can make a huge difference. The third way modern life makes us miserable is social media. So you have to evaluate yourself how addicted you are to it, how much you rely on social media. I guess for me, the way I look at it is it makes you feel like you're connected to others and that you're in the know and you're learning about what other people are doing and you're keeping up to date with the world. But really, you're just not living life. you're staring at a screen, looking at other people living life, especially if you spend hours on it every day. Now, I don't mean that you can never use social media. You can, and we'll get to that in a minute. But if you spend hours on it every day, it's really not, it's actually sucking the life out of you. It's not keeping you connected and in the know. It's sucking the life out of you. It's sucking your energy for life out of you. And it's doing a lot more than that, actually. What happens on social media is that you're getting an extraordinarily tainted and idealized view of other people's lives. You're seeing the surface, the 1% of their lives. And it's not only that, you're getting a totally distorted version of it. You know, we take the perfect photo, we edit it, we put a filter on it, we make ourselves look very happy, we make the environment look very idealistic. Everything looks pretty and beautiful and amazing. The actual experience of it isn't like that. And also, you're seeing the outside, you're seeing like the veneer. You're not seeing the person and how they're actually feeling in that moment. Just because they have a smile on their face doesn't mean that they're happy. Just because they go to all these amazing places and get photos and put filters on them, it doesn't mean that they're happy. It doesn't mean that they feel fulfilled. In fact, happiness has nothing to do with where you are and what you're doing, really. It has all to do with your inner state of mind. And on social media, the amazing veneer makes you think that the inner state of mind is also amazing. And it might be, but I would hazard a guess that it's actually not. And often people create an amazing social media profile and whatever because they actually feel very empty. But you don't see any of that. You just see the veneer and you fall for it. The other problem is that you're more concerned with looking good to others and creating this image, creating this false image based on all the photos you put up and all the videos and the personality you adopt. You're more concerned with that than actually enjoying your life. You're more concerned about creating this image to other people than enjoying your life. How twisted is that? And you think, oh, well, that's not true, Ross. Listen, when you go to a place or you go to a restaurant or you're doing an activity, are you doing it? I want you to be honest, especially if you're really dependent on social media. I want you to be honest. Are you doing it because you enjoy it and you want to do it? Or are you doing it because you want to get photos so that you can put them on social media and create this image? And listen, it might be a blend of the two, but I've been there and I know that a lot of the time I was creating experiences just so other people would think I was some cool guy. And I wasn't taking in the experience. I was just manufacturing it and thinking more about how I was going to look than what the actual experience is. You also get used to wanting highs all the time because it seems like everyone else has them. You know, people don't put up photos of their boring job. They don't put up photos of when they're sitting at home not knowing what to do with themselves. They put photos up of when they're with their friends, doing their favorite activities in a lovely place, and then they obviously edit those photos. And what happens? It makes you feel like everyone else is high all the time and you need to be high all the time. I don't mean on drugs, I mean entertained and stimulated all the time. And it's actually, life is not like that. Life is not a series of highs. And you can't escape that fact. And social media lulls you into this idea that it should be like that. And it makes you profoundly miserable. It also feeds into the two traps above, the comfort trap and the distraction trap. Comfort because it's cheap, you don't have to pay for social media in most cases. It's quick. We have it right next to us on our phone. Just need to turn on the Wi-Fi. And it's easy. That's all you're doing. You're just scrolling and looking. There's no effort involved. It feeds into your comfort addiction. And it also feeds into your distraction addiction. Isn't it just so convenient to have an endless number of people to follow, to have an endless number of photos to look at whenever you have an empty moment in your life or you have a lack of stimulation. You can just pull out your phone and distract yourself. In my case, I now only use social media for business. I gave up the platforms for personal use about 10 years ago. And goodness me, I'm so glad that I did. I really didn't realise how damaging it was to me, to my mental health, until I stepped back. And to be honest, I look around and I just see that people are enslaved. They're a slave to their mobile phone, they're a slave to social media, they're a slave to giving a fuck about what other people think of them. And again, it's quite disturbing. It's extremely disturbing sometimes. It feels like I'm in another world. The solution here, the way out of this, is you either take back your control and your responsibility. You're not in control. The companies who design these platforms are in control. You either take back your control and responsibility and you limit your use, and you take on board what I'm saying here and you realize that it is largely bullshit. It's an alternate reality that doesn't reflect real life. Or you give it up completely. I don't think you can be truly fulfilled if you're a slave to social media. It distorts your mind so much and it occupies so much of your energy and attention that I just don't think you can be truly fulfilled if you're a slave to it. You've got to take your control back or just go cold turkey. That's what I did and I'm so glad that I did that. Okay, number four is work. Listen, if you were to summarize most people's work nowadays, it's selfish, it's grindy, and it's unfulfilling. And it makes most people hate their lives in a very fundamental way. What's the model of work? If I was to describe, what do people think work is? What are we told it's supposed to be? The basic model is this. This is the idea. We should have a job that's stable and it pays well and it gives us security. Whether it's related to our passions or not isn't important. Whether it does good or not in the world isn't important. Does it pay well? Does it let us tell people that we earn a lot of money? That is the criteria. That's the criterion we use to judge whether a job is good or not. And you might say, well, okay, right, Ross, I need security and I need to know that the money's coming in. Of course you do. But there's nothing really fulfilling about this. In fact, I would be willing to bet that most adults hate their work. It feels like another life to them. It doesn't feel like it's them. It feels like they're living an alternate life. It feels like their life is extremely divided between non-work and work. And this is independent of salary. Salary, this isn't the other big trap here. Salary is such a big trap. We tend to, as I said, we tend to look at work in terms of money, the money it pays us. But salary is not proportional to how fulfilled you feel. In fact, it can be inversely proportional because people earn the most, often work the most, and a lot of the times the most well-paid professions are actually kind of soul-destroying. I have to be honest, I've never met an adult that likes their work. And I can see that it creates a profound divide in them. It creates a lot of misery. And it sucks their soul out of them. I actually saw this issue when I was very young. Like, I feel like my parents did not like their work. And I lived with that for so long that when I was very young, even by the age of 10 or something, I had this very strong sense that I didn't want to grow up. Because it just terrified me, the level of suffering that it can cause to have a job that you don't like. You might think I'm being dramatic here, but you need to be honest with yourself. It's not about me, it's about you. Like, listen, if you genuinely enjoy your work and you would do it regardless of how much money you earn, and you feel like it's you and it's authentic, fine. But listen, ask yourself, do you really enjoy your work? Or does it suck the soul out of you? How do you feel when you wake up every day? Be really honest with yourself, and I imagine that most people listening to this will realize that they actually hate their job. And you'll realize that you're in quite a predicament here, actually, because you've never developed the ability to earn money doing something that you enjoy. Here's the other problem with this. When I have this conversation with people, they often say something like, ah, well, it's just work. I just get on with it and I enjoy the rest of my life. I don't get my fulfillment from my work. I really disagree with this idea. Simply because work occupies such a huge percentage of our mental energy and our time. Half of our waking hours during the week is dedicated to work. 24 hours in a day, 8 hours for sleep, if you're getting the right amount of sleep. 8 hours of work for most people, that leaves 8 hours. So it's half your waking time during the week. And you tell me that you can just paper over the cracks and forget about it. I really don't believe that's true. I think that's a defense mechanism, and you're not being honest with yourself. If you don't derive satisfaction from your work, I don't know how you can be satisfied in life. I really don't. After work, you have obligations. At the weekend, you have obligations. It's not like after work, you can just do whatever you want. And you also spend a lot of time dreading work if you dislike your work. In fact, I'd be willing to bet that most adults enjoy 14 or 28% of their week. Let me explain why it's 14 or 28. One day of 7 or 2 days out of 7 is 14% and 28%. They enjoy Friday night, Saturday, and maybe Sunday morning. And even those days are tainted with sadness because they know that they're going to spend the rest of their week doing this selfish, grindy, unfulfilling work that pays them money but has nothing to do with their real passion in life. I actually see this as a huge, it's, I kind of think of certain challenges that humanity has to overcome, and we're doing pretty well actually, but work is, we've made a lot of progress in work. Most people aren't just working in the fields for 14 hours a day in all weathers and growing potatoes or whatever. We've moved on from that, but it's still a huge, to me, it's like a block. It's like almost like an energetic block in our society is this huge lack of fulfillment when it comes to work. How can we create a healthy society when most people hate their lives because of their work? To me, it really makes no sense. What's the solution here? Listen, I could talk for a long time about the solution. First of all, you need to be very determined to change the situation. You have to see the value of having passion in your work. You need to really understand it. And then you have to reconnect with your passions and develop serious skills in them. You've probably done unfulfilling work for so long that you've forgotten what you actually like doing with your life. Then you have to develop serious skills. And then you have to use them to do something good for the world. It's not enough just to improve your own career for your own sake. That is also an energetic block in humanity, is that most of our career is actually, most of our business and most of the work that gets done is done for selfish purposes. And you might say, oh, well, yeah, if you're working for some company, you're helping the company provide services to the public. A lot of them aren't doing that. They're providing services, but they're doing it for selfish reasons, not to actually help people. And that's why that's one of the fundamental flaws in the capitalist system. There's a big sacrifice involved, though. You might think that working, having a passionate career is easy. It's actually not. It takes a long time to develop, and it's not quick, easy, or fun. But that's ultimately the solution. The big picture solution to all of this. And if you're profoundly unfulfilled in your work, listen, you have to bite the bullet, otherwise you're going to spend your entire life doing work of that kind. That's the bottom line. Okay, the first four have been very practical and very sort of easy to understand. The next two are even more practical, but they might not seem like that, and they're quite deep, so brace yourself. Number five is in the head. We're miserable because we're in the head too much. And this goes down to our basic identity, who we think that we are on like an existential level, but also very practically moment to moment. This is who you think you are. You think that you are something that lives inside your head. Literally, that's what you think you are. You think that you're this thing that lives inside here somewhere. When you actually give it some thought, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It makes zero sense that you are this thing and living in your head. What does that even mean? But that's what we think, and we all co-perpetuate it in ways that are very subtle and go so to the heart of how we communicate with each other, and how in so many ways it's really hard to even begin to describe it. We go around living in the head, confusing ourselves with the head, confusing ourselves with our thinking. We're extremely disconnected from the body. We're extremely unaware of how thought dominates our entire life. We're unaware of the deeper reality of our body, which is that our body actually contains everything. We're profoundly disconnected from who we are on an existential level, because we think that we're this thing that lives in our head. We have no idea how we actually work, how our emotions work, how our happiness works, because we confuse ourselves with thinking. And we have no idea why we're fundamentally unhappy, because this type of contracted consciousness just, it destroys your ability to be in contact with these things. In my case, and this is the way out of this, meditation has shown me that these things are true. That I'm not who I always thought I was. I don't live in the head. I'm not this thing that lives in the head. That I can learn a lot about myself from being in the body more, and that actually my body isn't separate from everything that is around me. And wow, this really, it turns your life upside down, knowing this stuff. And it goes completely against everything that we're educated and taught. And it makes us profoundly miserable in ways that the only way is to see it for yourself. And then you'll start seeing the depth of the issue here. And finally, and this might seem the most philosophical, but it's actually the most practical of all. Our model of the universe makes us profoundly miserable in modern life. What you have to realize is that our model of the universe influences everything that we do, and it's largely unconscious. Let me explain what our basic model of the universe is. And again, this is, no one really talks about this, but it's implicit in everything that we do. Basically, our model, this is where we've got to in modern, at this stage of human history, this is where we've got to with our model of reality. Our model of reality is that we are separate beings. In other words, we have our own separate identity that is separate from other people's. We are separate beings that live in this physical box called the universe. We were born at some point and we're going to die at some point. Once the body can't take it anymore, the body stops working and you die, and you basically rot in the ground. You are this entity that lives in your body, and you need to fight and defend this identity that you have. And that life is very predictable. There's no real magic to it. It's just this physical thing, this dead physical thing made of atoms, and there's no real mystery and magic to it. And even though science in the last 100 years has seriously called into question this model, things like quantum mechanics, for example, have really shown the limitations of this relativity as well. And then even more into string theory and unified field theory and so on. This is what we're taught in mainstream education, and I actually think that this is what underlies most of human society. In a very, again, very unconscious, very sneaky way, not in a sinister way, but just because this is how we perceive the world, and it's something we perpetuate. And it certainly seems true on a sensory level. It seems consistent with how we experience the world. And it's a good model for practical purposes. It's helped us achieve a lot, not less overcoming dogmatic fundamentalist religion, which dominated for hundreds and thousands of years and made society a very, very dark place. But it's also deeply disillusioning and painful. And listen, again, this goes so to the heart of who you think you are and what life is all about that I can't really tell you why it's so disillusioning and painful. The place to start is to look at all your problems and your unhappiness and look for the core ideas of what reality is and who you are and what life is all about and how these underpin all your problems and your unhappiness. And you'll see that this model plays an enormous role in how you feel moment to moment. The way out of this is to change your model. This takes a long time. In reality, nothing is really separate from you. All the developed, mature spiritual traditions of the world know this and teach this. Physicalness, the physicality of the universe, is a perspective, as quantum mechanics shows. I am not saying that there is no physical world. I wouldn't go that far, but I will say that the physical world is a perspective. It's a very anthropocentric perspective that is not an absolute truth. It's actually intertwined with our senses and so on and our level of consciousness. Time is also a perspective. Einstein showed this mathematically. But even though I'm talking about that in theory this model isn't even true, that's not the best way to understand it. The best way is to see for yourself that it's not true. And how do you do this? Meditation, real yoga, I say real yoga because a lot of yoga isn't real, and contemplative practice will show you that nothing is separate from you, that physicality is largely a perspective, kind of an illusion, and that time is really just a perspective. It's not an absolute truth. And yeah, until you see this, I'd also say psychedelics can really just tear apart your model of the universe for good. And yeah, until you see how this affects your life, it's hard to really describe it to you. You need to see it for yourself. Now listen, all of this stuff might seem quite depressing. These six areas, it might all seem quite depressing, but the upside is that you can free yourself from it, from this disenchanting world that we've created. And I've shared how I've separated myself from it. And listen, if you're not happy in your life, I encourage you to look at these areas, just these six areas, just look at them and see how much they impact you. I'm sure that they have some kind of impact on you. Even though I feel like I've freed myself from a lot of them, they impact me, I'm not going to lie. And I can see how unhealthy it all is. If you want to deeply unwire all of this stuff, it's going to take time. It's not a simple thing. It's not quick. It's not quick and easy, I'm afraid. You have to actually slowly create a new identity. The lucky thing is that you found deep psychology, and basically everything I do is geared to experiencing deep contentment that you're never going to find in modern society and in modern trends and so on. And to have this deep understanding of yourself that underlies all that. It's not just flimsy fulfillment. It's deep, and it's based on a deep understanding of yourself and how you work that no one can actually give you. I can't give you it. I can just give you the tools. And that's what deep psychology is about. So I encourage you to keep following along with my work, and you will slowly avoid all of these traps. Thanks for watching, and do make sure to subscribe and check out the website for tons of free resources. This is Ross. Take care. Today we talk about six ways that modern society screws you up, and my six solutions